Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming out to Comic Book Club Live. Please give it up for your hosts, Alex, Justin, and Beat.
All right. Thank you, All-Star Boothman Prime. Oh, my God. What is he?
He's Boothman Prime.
Boothman Prime. I'm Alex.
Woo-hoo. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And thank you. That was a rare, for those of you listening at home, our Boothman actually got to come out of the booth and down on stage.
Very exciting. Usually, you got to see him in costume.
Yeah, it was crazy. That was an elaborate costume, and he flew.
I know.
He did.
No one would argue that.
A lot of times we don't know that he flies, but he can fly.
He often just hovers a couple of centimeters off the ground.
Yeah, the thing, though, is he has this hideous face that he has to hide, and that's why he's usually in the booth. But we all got to see it, and it turned out we looked at him, and we saw the soul inside of him rather than the man outside.
Wow, what a lovely parable you're telling about the fun of being a tech in any sort of situation.
Exactly. Speaking of tech... It's not technically accurate that our guests... Yeah. I can't do
audience this. Getting suspicious of your... there was an audible coming from an astute audience member who was like, Alex is going to blow this one.
And I did. But what I'm not going to blow is our intro for our guests. Very excited about them today. One of them has been on the show before. He's the host of the Movies My Friends Have Never Seen podcast. The other is an incredible writer who's done basically everything you're reading right now. Mm. He's worked on the great books from Boom, Namesake, as well as Power Rangers, which you may or may not have heard of, as well as Justice League of America and plenty of other things. Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Nadell and Steve Orlando!
Yeah. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Come on out.
Hello. Grab a seat.
Hello.
Grab a microphone.
Look, it's our guest. Walter here.
Great. Look at this. Oh, that's a great.
Come on, please.
Oh, what a gentleman.
Great.
We did
thank
it.
Welcome. Steve.
Oh, my goodness.
Welcome.
Guys, thank you so much for coming to the show.
Thank you. Very excited
to have you here. Nick, let's talk to you briefly first. You worked on an event recently. You worked on the Writers Guild Awards.
I wrote for the Writers Guild of America East Awards, which just happened last week. David Harbour from Stranger Things was one of the presenters.
Ooh, yeah. Very cool.
I got so many Stranger Things spoilers, guys.
Really?
What?
Yeah. Did you know they...
What you tell us?
Did you know they shoot in Atlanta and it's really hot?
Oh,
that's all I got.
Oh,
yeah.
Man,
boo. That makes that's so awesome. Much sense.
He was really nice. And then I, like, right after my fiance and I were talking to him, we were like, we saw him in Glengarry Glen Ross on Broadway like 5 years ago. Like, we should have said something to the bathroom.
No, he's probably not into that.
No,
not
he's
into
like
his
a
stage
theater.
Work. He's like, nope, I'm all about the big Hollywood stuff now.
Actors hate to be recognized when for anything they do.
When you're working on something, when you're writing for something like the Writers Guild Award, what's the process? How do you tackle that?
Well, this year, Lewis Black was the host.
Nice.
So,
you sit back and let him do his stuff.
Pretty much. Like, he's going to get angry about Trump at some point. Yes. So you just let that happen.
He likes to shake his jowls.
I love that. I love that comedian. He is amazing.
Yeah, he was great. And then, writing for the different presenters, Titus from Kimmy Schmidt was there.
Titus, nice.
So when you're doing, I asked this as somebody who's very interested in how to properly do segues.
Cool.
When you're doing that presentation,
we'll take your training wheels off.
Do you feel like, do you start to get annoyed at yourself when you sort of say, end up doing the like, writers are people who write. Here, now let's present this award to writers. Is that what you have to do?
It's funny because, I make fun of that kind of stuff when I see it, like, at the Oscars. Like editors edit, and then you have to, like, actually write about, like, documentary film script, and you're like, oh, man, you gotta just talk about the fact that they write scripts for documentaries. There's nothing else.
Yeah. The first camera was the human eye. I present the award to the documentary.
Now, the other thing that you do, we talked about this a little bit the last time you were on the show, but you do a podcast called Movies My Friends Have Never Seen. I think we can figure out what it is for the title, but talk about movies your friends haven't seen recently.
You got a bunch of dumb friends?
Yeah, well, the podcast is guests watch famous iconic movies that they've never seen, like Jurassic Park. We've done a lot of comic book movies like Iron Man and Batman Returns. It's really about the movie blind spots that everybody has. I'm sure you guys have some.
Oh, definitely.
Nope. No, oh, you've seen it all? I've seen every movie.
Wow, I've seen that's every movie.
What a life you must have.
Except for La La Land. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
Very excited to check it out.
I hear it won the Oscar. I didn't watch What Happened on Sunday.
Did you turned it off 5 minutes
something
before
happened?
The end?
Yeah,
nope,
I fell asleep.
Nothing really happened.
Oh,
not
okay.
Really
yeah.
Cool. So definitely check that out. Where can
people
check
out? What are your movie blind spots? I want to Pete, what about you? It's definitely not Tommy Boy.
Yeah, that I've covered. Yeah, I've seen most of the Oscar movies. I haven't seen La La Land.
No,
I've
like
seen
a classic movie.
Yeah, like a classic
seen.
Movie.
That's a blind spot.
Oh, what is that? Any of the Punisher movies or anything like that?
I've seen all those.
I've done Space Jam, so.
Yeah, I've seen Space Jam.
I've never seen Titanic.
Really?
That's a big one, yeah.
All right. One of my white whales are a man who hasn't seen Fight Club. And a woman who's never seen Dirty Dancing.
Oh, boy.
That's great.
Yeah, I don't know if
I've seen both of those.
I've also seen
both. So don't have me on.
I haven't seen Cocoon. This is pretty big for me.
Oh, really? Wow.
You haven't seen Cocoon?
Yeah, it's surprising, you know, with all the Steve Guttenberg, but I haven't...
I don't know how to approach what you're saying. Really, because of all of the Steve Guttenberg in the world.
Back, a lot?
Back in the 80s, Steve Guttenberg was in every movie.
I mean, there is a period of time.
Yeah.
For one movie in the 1980s.
How many Police Academy movies have you seen?
Oh, God. Sadly, all of them.
Wow.
Great. And the cartoon show.
That was a good cartoon.
Don't, you don't need to see sadly. You don't have to say sadly before you say that sentence.
Steve Guttenberg
Mission to Moscow, maybe you do.
The fact that you know those words is a problem.
I'm a fan of Assignment Miami Beach myself.
Nice.
Great. I feel like you could say, yeah, Police Academy 4, they went to school. Like, and people would be like, that's probably true. That's probably the name of the movie. Yeah.
Citizens on Patrol. I think that was fine.
I'm insulting
Citizens
everyone.
Citizens on Patrol. That's
pretty...
Come on. Steve, let's turn it over to you. There's a ton of stuff you're working on. I do want to talk about Namesake, though, which is a book that just finished up from Boom. And it's awesome. I love that book. I got to ask you to pitch the concept of the book, though. Like, there's a simple concept at the core, but that it blows out very quickly, mm-hmm. I think.
Well, Namesake, you know, kind of like, honestly, it was inspired by, it's like Django. It's like original Django, meaning the guy dragging the coffin behind his back. It's a man, Jordan Molasses, who receives two urns in the mail that also are conveniently bolas for fighting, with a message that he has to bury his father's, the problem being that they're from a different world called Ekte, which aligns with our world every 7 years. And so it's Django meets Final Fantasy with the grindhouse gore and action of the raid.
Nice.
And, you know, in four issues with some of the coolest, like, 2080-inspired art that I've ever worked with.
Wow. It's great. I mean, I don't want to spoil too much about the book, but exactly what you're talking about, that it just... It starts off rather simply as he heads towards this other world, and then it just builds and builds and builds and does not stop. There's pages of just, it's not exactly a car chase, but like a car fight, kind of, I guess is the way you call it. Yeah, which is great. And
It's car foo. I saw that in the...
Car foo?
Yeah. Yes, I saw that in the Keanu article where everyone was shocked that he's 52 years old, but he explains car foo and gun foo in that article. So
the thing that I'm most fascinated to find out from you for a book like this, when you're approaching a new magical world, what kind of research, I mean, and I put research in quotes, what kind of work do you have to put in to establish the role of the worlds going on?
I mean, It's more about building the rules, you know, so that it seems like not just anything can happen. And we sort of allude to the fact that there's like a very concrete thing that allows magic to happen in Ekte, magic, so to speak. And then, you know, once you create that framework, in our case, the Tific Force, which allows people to do what they do in Ekte, well, then you can move it in a different direction. But I think with the danger with magic is, well, if anything goes, then where's the drama? So we just got to set it to the left. Just enough where there's that one thing that's different. And, of course, that one thing that's different makes it a completely different world over centuries.
You know, I believe when they established the world of the Police Academy movies, I think what they were doing was sound effects were cool.
Right, yeah. That's where it started, and then
they built out a world around that.
He is a wizard, basically. Have you seen, I mean, he could do any...
Yes, your mouth is every machine, actually, if you're...
If any dimension I want to die in, it's that one.
I would like to talk about Midnighter in Apollo, run that we have talked about numerous times on the show. Like,
okay. All right. There's more to talk about with namesake, but you want to just...
That was a segue and a half.
I don't care.
No. I just want to mention, because namesake is 4 issues long, and it is excellent, and it's very enjoyable. Is it going to be corrected into a trade at all?
Man, I hope so.
Yeah.
There you go.
Almost definitely.
Okay, and sorry, before we get onto this, because this is all Pete wants to talk about all the time, is Midnighter, so just hold off for 1 second.
I'm trying, but you're fucking talking about bullshit over here.
He's vibrating.
It's not bullshit. It's a good book that we invited our guest on to talk about, Pete.
Oh, you invited him for that. I invited him for Midnighter and Apollo.
No, I invited him
just to talk.
Let him go, though. It's like when my dog has to take a shit.
All right, go ahead.
That is how Pete handles a lot of interviews, is having to take a shit the whole time.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Pete.
Literally and figuratively.
So, first off, I want to just congratulate you. It's an amazing run. I can't wait for the last issue. An amazing love story. Midnighter and Apollo are two kind of opposites a little bit, but... Their love is just so amazing, and I think that this is such a great idea, and I love the arc. I'd love to hear you talk about it. Like, how did you come up with it? Was it something that they approached you for, or did you pitch them?
He's pitching you on it, telling him what
it's almost like. The last issue comes out tomorrow.
Oh!
No, it came together. So, I mean, like, something that I've always wanted to do, you know, one of the first books that I read in collected edition was Saga of Swamp Thing, which people either make the connection or they don't, that kind of inspired Midnight and Apollo. Because it was powerful to me about the love between Abby and Swamp Thing. Again, they made it work despite the fact that, you know, he's a muck-encrusted mockery of a man and she's Heather Locklear. But at the same time, you know, when she gets killed by Arcane, he famously goes down to get her soul back. So I was like, okay, we need to do this, and we need to gay it up, and we need to also punch it up. And because it's time, without... I won't lean on the sentimental too much, but it's time that characters like Midnight at Apollo, gay characters, get that type of story.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it in the most explosive punch-in-the-face way possible, because this is a book that made its debut by killing someone with a porterhouse steak in issue 1, although there was originally an avocado in the pitch, but things change in development.
Oh, those editors can't
handle. An avocado was a bridge too far, but the steak made sense. So, so that was the idea, you know, to take this type of story and allow these characters to have it. And that said, when we decided to come back from Midnight at Apollo, your real life happened, and so it became about something more, you know, like. We always try to deliver the best action you can find in comics and the most inventive sort of paneling and layouts you can find in comics, whether it's ACO's style in Midnighter, whether it's Fernando's style in Midnighter Apollo. But, you know, honestly, like after the Pulse shooting, I sort of questioned whether we should do the book because I knew Apollo was going to get shot in issue 1, and I was like, okay, this is something. But then I thought about it more, and I said, actually, we need this especially right now.
Yeah,
we need characters who are going to go down, look evil in the eye, and say, no, fuck you, and have the strength to do that. And I didn't even I decided that, but it wasn't until I was doing press for issue 1. I realized how important it was to me even, you know. I was, like, basically swearing up and down on the phone to this lovely guy from The Advocate over why the book mattered. I was, like, fucking angry about it. Like, we need this now. And so that's sort of where it came from, this idea, like, you know, maybe we should lean away from this. But no, maybe we should lean into it because now more than ever we need to look, assholes in the eye and give them the finger and that's what these guys are there for. If anyone can do it, it's Midnight at Apollo. So that's what we're doing.
That's honestly the best answer you could have ever given to Pete.
I'm almost...
Wait, I can look assholes in the eye.
Emotional just to hear that response. It was beautiful. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Pete's going to take a short break now and just feel...
I mean, something not to read too much into your work, but through Midnight at Apollo and also namesake as well, there's very different types of LGBT relationships than we're used to see in comics. I mean, I grew up reading... the Alpha Flight North Star coming out issue, which
Come on, that's like a splash page. I don't normally discuss my sexual orientation in public or with villains, but just because you asked, I'm gay. Yeah. It's a great issue, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great issue, but something we've talked about on the show a lot is when you have a gay character in comics, that becomes their only characteristic, that they're not more complicated than that.
Okay.
There's not more going on.
Hold the phone here. North Star is also half fairy.
Oh, all right. Yeah. That's true. I love North Star. That's not my point. You're just talking about fun. I mean, we're in, obviously, a very different place in comics now than we were back when that issue and when other issues came out.
That's amazing.
What?
You can't make that shit up. But anyway, continue. I'm sorry.
Is a conscious effort on your part to inject different types of characters into the world and different types of LGBT relationships?
To penetrate the world.
Yes, yeah. To penetrate the world, exactly.
But not just for queer characters, for all different sorts of characters in general, because, like, you know, this is largely what fiction is for, is to give us some sort of story we connect with, and, you know, everybody deserves that, not just people who look like us sitting here. So that's always the goal, you know, and to do it in the most exciting way possible. Not necessarily just queer characters, but any type of non-normative characters, non-mainstream characters, you know, because it happened to me. You know, Midnighter is me when I was 13, realizing that there's, like, more than one way to be, you know, to be a queer person, you know, when you're, like, 10 and all you have is Jack from Will and Grace and Ellen, and your friend's dad is calling her Ellen Degenerate, and you're thinking of, like, seeing if you can just black bag that fuck and get rid of him, you know, like, which I didn't, but life has caught up
for
with
him. For the record, you didn't. For the record.
Yeah, life has caught up with him.
Someone did, but no one's ever.
We should mention our podcast actually has a legal record.
So well, you know.
We are the podcast of record.
He's alive. So
he's still a dick.
Also true, but, you know, that was important to me. So, you know, to see that you could be this other person, and to this day, people say, how do you get Midnighter's voice? Well, he's just me, but with more killing, you know, that's the way I talk. So
it's beautiful.
We have to put those things in because that, like, people say, oh, well, like, get your politics out of comics or whatever, but whatever, man, they've always been there. Like, Peter Parker was a big deal because it showed, like, nerds and or whatever that they could be the heroes too. Like, this has always been the formula. Okay, like Superman showed people that, you know, immigrants coming to America, that they gave them a hero. The whole idea, the world outside your window of the Marvel Universe, is that it is outside your window. It's people you can relate to. So this is nothing new. It's just time to do it more, faster, and hopefully better than before.
Cool. What was it like working with DC? What was it like working with DC on that book and maybe the more corporate elements of, like, Time Warner?
Honestly, like, we've had... this is, like, a boring answer, but they've been nothing but supportive of Midnighter and Midnighter to Apollo, you know? Cool. It's well-liked internally. People, I get emails about how the new ways that people blow up in every issue and you know, there's never been pushback on the book that you wouldn't have do with any other book of a similar rating. Like, yes, we can't show, like, there's weird rules like how much percentage of an ass you can show, but that doesn't matter if that ass is straight.
74%.
You're close. It doesn't matter if that ass is straight or gay, though, you know. So, like, they've been nothing but supportive, and we pushed a lot of boundaries in that with what we've shown in Midnighter and Midnighter to Apollo, with the same idea that, you know, we would go just as far as you would see in something like Green Arrow or something like you could see in Grayson. I was very fortuitous that, like, the month Midnighter debuted, Grayson had a woman screaming dick in a splash page.
Yeah.
And so, like, after that, there was never any question about what we would do in the book. And, you know, I mean, look, when Kevin Smith was on Green Arrow with Phil Hester back in the day and I was, like, 9... you know, he had a 3-panel shot of Green Arrow going down on Black Canary and her, like, shooting him with a hose, being like, oh, I'll soak you before you soak me. To this day, I don't know what they were doing.
Kevin Smith has it either. Let's win. Yes.
We'll never know.
When two people love each other.
Now's the time to do that.
Yeah, should we set that out now?
Yeah.
We were talking about this a little bit backstage, and this definitely comes through in Midnighter as well, but you are very enamored with the smaller, more niche characters in the DC universe, And the new book kicked off with him. I don't know their actual name, but the Subway Pirates.
The Subway Pirates.
The
yes.
Subway Pirates. There you go. That's their actual name. And then we've talked about a lot with the book using Neron. Is it Neron or Neron, first of all?
It's Neron for me, and yeah. I'm always right. So
there you go. So why Neron, who is arguably from one of the, shall we say, not best crossovers in DC history, but you've done a great job.
That crossover
Hold on. Hold the phone here. I know you're not talking about Underworld Unleashed.
Certainly maybe, Underworld Unleashed.
Maybe a little bit.
I feel like I got to walk off the show now.
Oh! Wow.
Look, Neron to me, your incorrect opinion about that crossover notwithstanding. Sure. drawn by Howard Porter, Black Handle. Jeez. Anyway, so the point is, also some of the best moments that got me into comics. I mean, the villain of the Zoriel and Asmodel arc, along with Asmodel and JLA, and this character that always sort of professed to be bigger than just like Lucifer or something like that, as we've shown him. He's sort of like the idea of hell in the same way that the Endless are ideas and things like that. And also, I've always loved the fact about him that... there is a comic bookiness to him, for lack of a better phrase. I love that the cosmic god versions of Thor and all these things live in comics. And so Neron is like, you know, he's scowling and he has armor and he has a big cape. And I like that sort of world he inhabits.
And his plan for Underworld Unleashed was to slightly power up a bunch of shitty villains. Like, that was his scheme.
It makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
It was the most comic booky of all plots.
But he has like I've enjoyed his sort of strange appearance and strange appearances since then, because he always does sort of get the screw job, you know. He was in Day of Judgment and he sort of screwed Asmodel out of being the Spectre. He's like the used car salesman of DC Comics, and I don't know. I've always liked him. At the same time, like. Stepping away from the archetypes that you think of, Beelzebub and Lucifer, you get to do something bigger. You know, no one read Underworld Unleashed or enjoyed it, so like no one has strong associations with his character or what he stands for, although I think they should. And so you can go in some places where maybe you couldn't go with other characters.
You mentioned Justice League. You just started on Justice League of America this week. That's obviously a big deal. What is it like taking on these characters? Or more specifically, the thing that's interesting about this book is it's Batman leading a team of... They're not exactly street-level heroes.
Is Batman leading it, though?
Is he not leading
it? Is he leading it?
Oh.
No, he's asking you, Alex.
I don't know.
it's like Batman and the Outsiders.
Hold your tongue.
That's
a good book. I mean, it's no Underworld Unleashed, but it's a good book.
So what in your perspective is the idea of the book then?
I wouldn't say they're ground level as much as, with one notable exception, they're people that either are human or used to be human. So it's the idea. I mean, even Killer Frost, the Ray, despite their current situation, started out as humans. And so it's a team that is, you know, due to things that have gone on in Batman's life recently in the DC universe, both a realization of his own mortality, his own fallibility. I mean, you see that in the beginning of Tom's run where he was ready to die. Mm-hmm. You know, that changes someone. This idea of creating things that are bigger than him and realizing that, you know, he needs things that are bigger than him. And so that's where the team comes from, a team that can inspire people in a way that he necessarily by himself can't, because he's just part of a whole and he's just one idea. And you know, Batman's power comes from myth and comes from fear, but sometimes society needs more. So that's where this team is sort of gathered around, along with this moment he has with Killer Frost and Justice League Suicide Squad, where she does prove herself to be able to change and to be better, and that's a paradigm shift for him. You know, and she calls him out and says, well, if I could do this, other people deserve this chance too. So that's really what the Justice League of America is about, is people bettering themselves, not just the people on the team and the core, which symbolizes that, but everyone that sees them. You know, they're going to be more visible, and as the story goes on, more and more visible. And I think that the reason I say is Batman the leader, because I think in his mind, if anything, there are two leaders. There's Vixen and Batman, because they come from totally different sides and points of view. He, if anything, is known as a loner and has built himself as a loner, but she is the very opposite. Even though they've come from very similar places, both orphans, both who've built themselves into billionaires, She's done it in a very public, open way. He's done it in the very, in the reverse at every turn. And through her totem and the ability to connect to the red, she is like literally the opposite of him, knowing that we're all connected when she turns that thing on. So those two opposing points of view are, in his mind, what the team needs to run and hold together going forward.
One of the things that I really enjoyed leading up to the series is you wrote a series of one-shots that focused on each character. And it was almost, in the best way, frustrating because I read it and they each felt like, oh, this is the first issue of a really great run on this individual character. I mean, I assume that was by design to give yourself as much material as possible for each of their individual arcs going into Justice League.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to, as well, to just refresh people's memories of some of these characters, you know, like, look at Neron's legions of adoring fans. You know, sometimes people don't remember these characters when they come back, or they need to be reminded who they are if they've sort of gone astray. And that's what Rebirth is about. Like, it's about focusing down to the core of these characters so that people who are longtime fans are reminded why they're great, and if you're not a longtime fan, you understand why they're great. You can do both just by truly focusing in and understanding who the character is. And on, I mean, and by the way, that's the mission with all of these books. I mean, that was the mission with Midnighter as well. I mean, like, who is this character? Understand it on issue one, and then you want to know more, and then we give you more.
Yeah. Awesome. Before we move on, I do want to ask you about another Boom title that you work on. You work on Power Rangers.
Yeah, something very different. I do the Bulk and Skull adventures in Power Rangers, which could not be, especially when they asked me to do it, further from my work at DC and other places, which was known for like explicit violence. And here we have like a punk rock Laurel and Hardy endeavoring to show Angel Grove that they're the true heroes and they're the real cool ones, not the Power Rangers.
What a rich continuity you have to work with.
Yeah, so the thing is that I think those characters are really fun. I just it's always sad. It's always interesting to me what gets through and what doesn't. I will always be very sad that we at some point in the run, like, they call them like the Boo Hoo Rangers or something like that, and I really wanted them to be called the Spew Rangers. No, I'm sorry, it was the Blue Ranger. So he was referring to the Blue Ranger, and I wanted him to be called the Spew Ranger, and they were like, that's a little much. So just imagine, like, Bulk and Skull could have been PG-13 if not for Saban. But I don't
even know if that's PG-13.
It was so crushing to me. PG. I also had a really good comptroller joke, and they were like, well, no one really knows what a comptroller is. Exactly. But like, you explain the joke, and saying the joke doesn't make sense. This is insane. But it has been really fun though, like, to flex different, totally different muscles. Those muscles being really sort of like grammatical based humor and things that I'm shocked anyone would come to. But you know, it's really fun to do something like that when people expect vulgarity and exploding eyeballs coming at the reader from you. And, you know, it was a shock. The thing about comics is, let me explain it in one anecdote only.
Finally, we've been waiting.
You can
for
spend
years.
Months, yeah, like, as my rambling story goes on, you can spend months on a pitch and they're just like, we don't really know. Or you can just like see an editor and be like, you know what you need? You need Bulk and Skull, but like Archie, but like punk rock. And they're like, all right, you're in. And like, that's as long as that pitch took.
It's like cracking a code. You said like the right four words.
Yeah. Now I just have to find the next right four words so I can continue working. But
excellent. Well, speaking of continuing working, before we move on, see, I'm doing this.
You're doing a great job.
That was a better say.
We're huge fans of you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. What else do you want to plug? Anything else before we move on?
Oh, man. Midnighter Apollo 6 tomorrow.
Cannot wait.
Yep, things are going to blow up. More obscure characters that you haven't seen on panel in a long time. And then April, Batman in the Shadow, probably my favorite thing I've done so far. Amazing work by Riley Rossmo, who I worked with on Night of the Monster Men. It's his best work ever. You know, the first issue cover variant by Cliff Chang. Amazing.
Yeah, Cliff Chang. The whole thing,
you know, I'm getting an assist from Scott Snyder on that. The whole thing is amazing. It's like, you know, the Shadow's my favorite character. I have a signed Alec Baldwin movie poster in my...
Wow, that's probably one of a kind.
Yeah.
Is Penelope Ann Miller's character in Batman the Shadow?
Is Margot Lane in the Shadow? Yeah, come on now.
I think the real race to the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, that's
here.
How we
for
all
me, it's
it,
every so. Penelope Ann Miller movie is Penelope Ann Miller.
All right, cool.
Is
well,
she
guys.
In other movies?
Nope. Oh, just
she's
in
Kindergarten Cop.
Whoa, slow down.
Wow. I've never heard someone say that with such outrage. It's great to hear that.
I'm her manager, currently.
Yeah, clearly.
Cool. All right, guys, we're going to move on with our next section, which we like to call the stack.
Yeah.
And yay, in the stack, we're going to talk about some books that came out this week. Let's kick it off with Pete's pick, Curse Words, number 2 from Image Comics.
Yeah.
Why do you fucking like this one?
Well, whoa. This fucking book is fantastic. First issue was really magical, setting up this kind of world, this. Maybe hero, maybe villain, main character, fun koala sidekick, a lot going on. And this we get to see a little bit like he did this drastic move to save people and then to see how that all unfolds.
I think that says enough.
So it's about this wizard named Wizard, who was an evil wizard sent to destroy our Earth. He finds out that hot dogs are not that bad and decides, maybe I won't destroy
and that
the Earth.
And TV is cool.
Cool. So he decides to become a cool, good wizard who gives out wishes for money. Mm. His old boss, who sent him to destroy the Earth, sends another guy to kill him and destroy him and destroy the Earth. He ends up killing that guy in the center of a baseball stadium. They're like, maybe you're not a good guy. Everybody freaks out because he horribly murdered this guy. So he takes the entire baseball stadium, shrinks it down, and freezes them. And then this issue is all him being like, okay, so I took a couple of thousand people and I shrunk them. And then his koala says, hey, you know people can watch stuff on TV, right? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's okay. I froze all of them, and I put them in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
And so the whole issue is him trying to deal with that. Yeah. What do you think about the book, Justin?
I mean, it's fun. It's very aggressive, I think, is a good word to use. Like, this character is a villain trying to do good things, but he doesn't really care about being good. He just wants to chill. Like,
right.
You can tell
classic.
Because he's very classic
scenario.
Like chilling out hardcore. And so I like the tone of it and like the point of view of this character.
Yeah, Ryan Brown's art is great also. Yeah. There's a lot of ridiculous magic stuff that happens here. You get to see other worlds and you get to see a koala and get to see dictators and action. Wow. And it's all a lot of fun.
Did you guys notice the mistake in this comic?
So reason Pete wanted to talk about this.
No, this isn't the reason. I love this book.
Yeah, but you said there was a mistake, and it was a big mistake, and you wanted to talk
it's
about
not.
It. And you won't tell us what the mistake is.
Yeah, I want to see if you guys noticed it.
No, I didn't notice
what
it.
Are you
what
talking
is the
about?
Mistake?
Did you notice it?
Here,
well,
I'm going to venture a guess. I'm just going to predict the future right now. You're going to tell us what the mistake is, and then we're going to explain to you how it's part of the plot.
That's it being a dick, Alex.
Okay, we'll see. So he shrunk down a stadium, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then said, now the outside of the stadium is Yankee Stadium. The artist made Yankee Stadium.
Uh-huh.
Then when they walked outside, they said, we're no longer in Queens. But the Mets play in Queens, not the Yankees. They should have said the Bronx.
I mean,
so
Ryan Brown is from Chicago.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think it's one of those things where it's like you're working as a writer, as an artist. There has got to be some kind of like, you know, hey, don't, if you're going to make Yankee Stadium, we can't say the Bronx, you know, we can't say Queens.
So people, I don't know if you know this,
right.
But people from all over come to Yankee Stadium to see games.
Oh, you're saying the people. Well, I actually think that Pete is right. Like, that's
what?
I mean, just because someone.
What?
It would make sense that the guy's not all like, right. Hey, I'm from Queens and I traveled to the Bronx, but now we're in this fantasy world and I'm not living in Queens anymore. Like,
right.
That's not the full extent.
Because if you walk out of.
What do you. Well, let's turn to our guests. I think it's important to ask them. What do you guys think? If you were walking out of Yankee Stadium, but you were from Queens, would you say the sure as hell ain't Queens or the sure as hell ain't the Bronx?
Do you think. I mean, it's not Queens. That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's accurate.
I would say, why did I pay $14 for a hamburger?
That's a really good
that's
point.
Another
that's an excellent point.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that I would ever be walking out of Yankee Stadium?
No.
There we go.
All right, there we go. Cool. Well, I think your problem is solved.
Yeah. The ultimate comic book fan answer.
Other than that said, I do know that it's in the Bronx.
Nice.
Yes.
Good.
Other than this huge La La Land Moonlight style gaffe, I think the comic is pretty good.
Wow. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty big, man. I couldn't read the book after I saw that. I'm not going to be able to follow it now yeah.
I can't believe Pete is literally lighting on fire now and burning in front of all of us.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And he just left to kill Charles Saul?
Yeah, that's aggressive, but worth it.
That's
it's too absolutely much. Right. Don't
Let's
make
move
a mistake.
On with your pick. Outcast, number 25, also from Image Comics.
This book... only 25 cents, so what Woo-hoo! A deal. This book is also a TV show on Cinemax that
Which
scared
is too
the shit
scary
out of
to watch.
It. Pete said it was too scary, he had to stop watching it.
Yep.
And Pete's an adult person. but this book has been, it's a weird book, especially Robert Kirkman, known now as an epic storyteller. Like most of the things he makes ends up going on to a much larger media format. And this did the same, but this book has been so slow and the pace has been very just like moving slowly each issue. And this issue, finally, we have a huge break in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's
issue.
About a guy who whose life is ruined by demonic possession. And it turns out it's because he has some sort of ability to exorcise the demons that no one else has. And this we come to find out that his whole town is mostly taken over by demons possessing the townspeople. His family was ruined. He's gotten his family back together, and then he's cornered, and his father shows up and starts to do
What a great
real like
entrance, like amazing. Like that's got to be the coolest way to be introduce a son to his father. Like this guy shows up, does all these badass
moves. He's got a
cool
beard.
Yeah, and then it's like murdering somebody with his bare hands, and the son's like, "Who are you?" And he's like, "I'm your father."
Yeah.
Like, coolest.
I know. I can't think of another.
I immediately called my dad and started yelling at him.
Because he didn't do that.
Yeah, I was like, "How come you didn't do anything?"
I can't think of
me?
Another cool situation where someone said, "I am your father."
Yeah,
nothing. There's nothing in any movie anything
that
like that. There's
you,
no
yeah.
other way.
I certainly can't think of anything. Have you guys checked out Outcast at all?
Yeah, I like it because if Walking Dead is Robert Kirkman's, mainstream horror movie, Outcast is his weird 70s exorcist knockoff that you'd see on TV late at night.
Yeah.
And it's moody. The art's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul Azaceta's is
so
good.
I haven't seen the show yet. I'm also scared of it.
What I really like about Outcast is there's also all these small little heartfelt moments with the family that you just feel, you're like, oh, it's going to get so shitty for you guys. But it's just all these, really powerful moments that, somehow he comes back to, even though everything's falling apart around him.
So do all the possessions take place in one town? Is it Murder, She Wrote, or?
so far it's all focused on this one area, but, I guess we don't really know yet.
Fair enough. So he is the Jessica Fletcher of demonic possession.
Yeah, Angela Lansbury actually is in this issue.
That is about the best reason that I could read it.
She's a huge comic fan.
Cool. All right, let's move on to our last pick. This is my pick, Hulk number 3 from Marvel Comics.
Yeah!
I cannot say enough good things about this book. This, we talked about the first issue a little bit. I think, and the idea of the book is... She-Hulk, formerly She-Hulk, now Hulk, Jennifer Walters, she was in a coma while her cousin, Bruce Banner, was killed during the Civil War II storyline. She woke up frustrated, angry, broken, and is trying to get her life back together. As a lawyer, she has not become She-Hulk for three issues now, because it's all actually about taking Hulk down to the level of metaphor. Like, it was always a metaphor, but here now, she's dealing with PTSD, she's dealing with stress, she's dealing anxiety. With anxiety about going outside. At the same time, there's a case that she's working as a lawyer of somebody who has become a shut-in and a hoarder, but has some otherworldly thing that's influencing her potentially to do this. It's great. It doesn't need the action scenes at all because...
Well, what I like about it is they're building the tension so hard of getting to an action scene, and it hasn't happened in these first issues. So it's like, And it's working, though. I say that as a compliment. Like, it's successfully building this tension. Her anxiety is getting closer and closer to overtaking her, and yet it hasn't happened yet. I really like it as well.
Yeah, I just love that we are at a place where you could read a comic book which is all just about actual anxiety and what actually happens to anxiety sufferers through set in the Marvel Universe through the lens of the Hulk.
Does that make you anxious?
Yeah, I like a lot of the stuff in here. I don't necessarily 100% identify with myself, but I know people who go through the same thing, and it's crazy realistic.
Yeah.
I really love the art and the way it sets up this world. I really enjoy all the small kind of fucked up shit, especially when the cops are kind of walking around and being like, this place is creepy, right? And then you see like a little kid in the corner like drawing. I'm like, holy shit, this is creepy.
Imagine walking in a room and there's just a little kid drawing in the corner that you don't know.
Yeah, that would freak me the fuck out.
Kids,
I would run
kids
around.
Shouldn't draw.
No. Exactly. It's bad for everybody, bad for comics.
But yeah, I do really like what they're artistically doing with this book, and it's very enjoyable, and I hope it's selling
off. Yeah, I'd say Mariko Tamaki's writing is great, but Nico Leon's art is gorgeous in this book. Yeah. The characters are all very different. They're all so expressive, and the way the panels are laid out builds up the tension, to your point. There's one in here after two cops leave an apartment and they get dragged through the snow by something. We don't see what it is. All you see is probably the trails that were left in the snow after they've been dragged, and it's so good.
Yeah, it's really interesting take on She-Hulk after pretty much every She-Hulk book has been comedic.
Yeah.
The one prior, the Charles Soule book, was more comedy and more about just She-Hulk, so it's cool to see a book that's like just about Jennifer Walters.
Yeah. What about you, Steve? Are you a Hulk fan?
No, I was excited when they announced this. I mean, Mariko is doing a really, really amazing job on Supergirl being super with us. And it's a perfect... I mean, I was really excited, even on a visceral level, that you know, Jennifer Walters was going to just get to be Hulk. You know, there's always seems to be like a derivative when you know, you have characters that throw their, like, you know, some sort of gender signifier on. People always think that they're secondary. And so, I honestly, from the start, I was on board with this idea that, you know, now she's Hulk. She's Hulk. You know, anyone can be Hulk. A Hulk is not a gendered thing. So, I mean, I was on board with that. And as you said, the art is the could not be more my taste, like a little bit of Corey Walker, a little bit of like Juan Mabillo, like from the Dan Slott run. It's a great book.
Yeah. So good. All right. And we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience question.
Yeah.
Okay. And guys, I'm going to come out to you. You ask a question about absolutely anything for one of our amazing guests, for anybody about anything. You're going to get some free comics from Pete.
Yeah.
This hand popped up first, so I'm going to go up to you. Come over here, sir. What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Kevin. I have not seen Fight Club. Whoa. Well, I did watch the live-action Police Academy series in the 90s.
Well,
so your question
just trumped everybody.
So your question is for me, all right.
Okay. Well, my question is for everybody, and it's actually building off of your podcast. Are there comic runs, classic or recent comic runs, that you've wanted to read, but for whatever reason you just never got to?
Great question, and this is potentially horribly embarrassing for everyone.
I mean, this is not actually an answer. I'll keep thinking about it, but Pete got super pissed at me when I said I wrote Preacher for the first time a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Basically nearly murdered me.
Yeah.
I definitely did. You sometimes skirt that line with me.
As murderable?
Yeah.
Let me throw this out. I've never read Preacher.
Fucking piece of
shit.
Like,
you dropped your mic and then were so mad that you couldn't talk into it that you had to pick it back up to yell at me.
I've been saying nothing but amazing things about Preacher this whole time.
I know.
And you won't read it?
It's not that I won't read it. It's just it's a perfect thing to say to you to make you angry.
Oh, great.
Pete, what about you? Is there anything you...
I've read everything. No, there's plenty of stuff that I haven't read that, I don't know, like what's the biggest one where you're like, oh, you're an asshole?
Sandman.
No, I've read Sandman.
Nice. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Oh, does it make you angry?
No, I'm not making me. You're not making me angry.
Probably the Swamp Thing that always everybody talks
Alan
about.
Alan Moore
Swamp
Thing. Including me 20 minutes ago.
Just like very recently.
Everybody talks about Alan Moore Swamp Thing.
Gotta read that.
Not just you, but yes, it comes up a lot, and I have not read it.
You have to just pretend.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't read it.
Nick, you got one?
I've never read Frank Miller's Daredevil, and I feel like watching the Miller and Mazzucchelli, and I feel like watching the Netflix show, I'm getting like the watered-down version of a lot of that story.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Steve, what about you?
I've never read, this is not on par with you fools, but I've never read Astro City.
Oh, yeah,
I haven't either.
Despite, by the way...
Come on! Yeah, Astro City!
A lot of people revere that almost as highly as these things.
Yeah, Astro City's great.
Again, tuck it back in. But, like, funny thing
I'll
is...
I'll never tuck it back in.
I actually, like, on top of all that, I learned, like, the basic way of that I create villains from Astro City, despite not reading it, because of a feature in Wizard Magazine.
Oh, Wizard.
Yes. Back when print existed.
Right. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, no, like Ross and Busick created the Samaritan's archenemy in Wizard and sort of broke down how they created him to be the opposite of Samaritan in every way. So I still have that article and use it whenever I'm thinking up a new villain for a character, which ironically, again, because I have never read Astro City.
What's stopping you from reading it if you use it every
time? Every issue that comes out is what's stopping me because it just gets more, it becomes more and more of a challenge as time goes on.
You may be suffering from Hulk-like anxiety.
It could be. And I already know the Confessor is a vampire, which is like the big thing.
Spoiler.
I know.
Huge.
I know. It's huge. But I will get there.
All right, cool. Let's get another question from anybody. You're going to get some free comics. Come on, anything. Love advice.
There you go. Love advice. Love advice.
What's your name? What's your question?
Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey. Who would you like to see replace Hugh Jackman?
Somebody short.
Somebody who is actually short.
Sorry, the question, just to clarify, was in life. Like, who would you like to see replace Hugh Jackman?
The Boy from Oz, obviously.
Yeah, the Boy from Oz, in Australia, any of those things.
Well, it's funny that Pete is so bothered by Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine because he's too tall.
He is too tall.
Are you excited, then, that he's giving up after Logan?
Yes, I cannot wait. I mean, the problem is we're just going to get X-23 and...
You know that your options back then, besides Hugh, were Dougray Scott, who, you know, the supporting actor in every movie that is direct to DVD, and Danzig, right? And you're still angry
about
Hugh?
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I just wish that, for me, a big part of Wolverine was how short he was. It would have been nice if
that
they tried
to... That was a big part about
it. Yeah, it was a huge part.
Do you know about the claws? I was a very short kid
and constantly got picked on
for it. I think you should have to get Danzig now as punishment
as
for that
punishment
opinion.
For that opinion. Yeah. Maybe Martin Short.
I just wish they would focus on that.
He'd be fun. Martin Short. He's short, and his name's short, and he's
I see a lot of qualities.
He's Canadian, I think, so that's perfect.
Yeah. Or like Paul Giamatti. Like, I want like an angry angry character actor.
Yeah, yeah. That guy could pull off saying bub a lot, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Alex, don't you?
No, I have no ideas. I don't know. I don't think they're going to... I mean, he's kind of like the Batman of the X-Men universe, right? So they got to do another Wolverine something at some point. But I don't think they're going to replace him anytime soon. He has been... in every X-Men movie, every single one. So I think, if anything, they're going to have to retire Wolverine for a little bit and move on.
And then just, like, they'll just CGI him. I mean, this is where we're at now.
Yeah, wow. 100%.
But also, I hear the woman in Logan, the girl, is going to be phenomenal, and we're all going to be in love with her, and so she'll be, you know... replacing Wolverine, so it'll be fine.
She's short because she's nine.
Perfect.
That's what you need. You need a child to play Wolverine.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can be Jonathan Lipnicki.
Oh, that's a good idea. He might be. I think he did grow up eventually.
You know what? It's fine. We'll take
the kid from Lion.
Cool. I think we can take one more question. Absolutely. Anybody? Come on. You guys have to have something. Yes, there you go. All right. What's your name? What's your question?
My name's Joe, and favorite Batman love interest?
Great question.
Ooh.
Favorite Batman love interest?
I'm going to go Catwoman.
Nah, no. That's a fake relationship.
That is not a fake relationship.
I just
don't. Don't bring Trump.
We had a whole argument. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just the fake word fake. I can say it's not always about news.
All right.
I feel like that relationship has been we talked about this like a few episodes back.
Yeah.
What is the woman who ran Checkmate for a long time?
Oh, it's Sasha Bordeaux.
Sasha Bordeaux. That's the run of comics when they were getting together was my favorite Batman relationship.
It's not Silver St. Cloud.
That one also seemed very... She seemed like not to keep saying fake, but a fake character. It's like, you're here to be in love with him.
I got news for you. They're all fake, my friend.
No. Oh. Sasha Bordeaux's real.
My second answer would be Zatanna.
Okay. Zatanna's good.
That's a good answer.
That's a good answer.
I was going to say Silver St. Cloud, but I'll just go Vicky Vale, but only from... The Kim Basinger Batman.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Also, Steve. Kim Basinger only.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to hear from
Kim Basinger and LA Confidential.
All of us here have written Batman, so who's the definitive love interest for you?
I mean, himself is the real answer.
Sure, nice.
I'll go counter. Like, I think aging Batman, I have always liked Catwoman, actually. Like, I love... I don't know about now, like, because it seems like...
Right now it seems very forced to me.
But, like Huntress, before Crisis, I love the pathos. Like, imagine your mom is Catwoman and your dad is Batman. Like, yeah. You have a lot of standards to live up to and some shit to work out. In the long run, I could see her. Maybe not, like, current Bruce, who is, like, still, like, gritting his teeth all the time. But, you know, like, Unforgiven Bruce, I could see.
They could go in together on, like, a condo in Florida or something. And
yeah,
really,
you know.
Like, chill.
Sure. Probably Vanity, because it's the most depressing city in the DC universe.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's where Batman vacations.
I'll tell you the one I dislike more than any other, and we've talked about this on the show before, but whenever they pair up Batman and Batgirl, it creeps me out. I don't know if you guys have seen Lego Batman, and not that there's like a lot of raunchy sex in that kids movie or anything like that, but Batman is in love with Batgirl, with Barbara Gordon. Creeped me out the entire movie.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I'm not going to see that movie.
I mean, I know they're not related.
I also really liked, only in the animated show, I like Wonder Woman and Batman.
Yes, that was so
that
great.
That was good.
I was going to bring that up. I'm so glad you did.
How
that
much
was
Lego
awesome.
Genitals do we see in the...
So many.
Yeah.
They're just very blocky.
I never had that piece when I was a kid.
Yeah. No, there's this whole plot line. Like, they have one of... Never mind.
No, good. Yeah, no, keep going. keep digging. Going. Finish this, though.
Keep dragging it out. All right, that's it for your audience questions. Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LaPage.
All right, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics, because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. Who would like $25? Simple raising of the hand. A simple raising of... Yes, you brave volunteer, come on down.
Oh, congratulations.
What,
there's people that don't want $25.
Remind us of your name again.
Mike.
Mike, audience Mike. So how this is going to work... Yeah, one person supported you. How this is going to work is I'm going to read you a question, listen to all three possible answers, and then if you get all three questions right, you own $25, all right? So today's trivia is on fun facts about the guest. Oh. All right, question number one. Steve Orlando has written some amazing comics like Midnighter and Apollo. Seriously, it's amazing. Check it out. Which comic hasn't he written? Is it A, Namesake, B, Supergirl, or is it C, a shitty comic? So it's either A, B, or the correct answer being C.
I'm going to go with C.
C is correct. That is
nice.
Right.
Yeah.
So far, he has yet to write a shitty comic.
Wow. What research you must have done.
Yeah, I've done a lot. I've read a lot of his stuff. All right, question number two. Nick is co-creator of the viral hit blank. Is it A, Honest Disney Movies, B, Honest Rom-Coms, or is it C, Honestly, I Don't Know? So it's either A, which is the correct answer, or I will also accept C, but only if you're being honest.
This is like every job interview I've been on.
Yeah. I think A.
Yes, yes.
Nice, great job.
Honest Disney movies, it's hysterical. Check it out. All right, last question. Steve recently wrote some fantastic one-shots for what group of superheroes? Is it A, the Teen Titans, B, the Justice League of America, or is it C, not this fucking option? So it's either A really or it's B.
Really ran out of gas on that one.
A?
Or you could say B and be correct.
B.
B nice. Is correct. Justice League. There you go. $25 free.
Fantastic. That was very aggressive, Pete. I just want to mention that.
Classic Pete's aggressive trivia.
Yeah, there we go. Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is a new comic book day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
I'm not just saying this because somebody's here, but Midnighter in Apollo, number 6 of 6. I can't wait to see how it ends. I'm nervous about it.
You know, I'm going to say something, a book I've never picked up, but I've heard a lot of hype about. Flintstones has been, I've heard that book is very good.
Yeah.
And I've heard it from a bunch of different places. I wanted to pick up one issue. Flintstones 9 comes out tomorrow. It's supposed to be this like highly irreverent take on the Flintstones.
All right, there we go. I'm looking forward to Nailbiter number 30 is coming out tomorrow.
You are.
I'm pretty sure that's the last issue of the series by Josh Williamson. It's about this town that's full of serial killers. They're finally going to actually reveal why the town is full of serial killers.
Also Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, it is. If you look at it, every comic in its own way is Murder, She Wrote.
Man, Murder, She Wrote and Police Academy. What is your life like? Nonstop.
Great book. Definitely don't pick up this issue because it's the last one, but pick up the whole run of this issue. Steve, what are you looking forward to?
I'm going
to
talk also Image comic, Extremity number 1, which has like crazy work by Daniel Warren Johnson, who I think is one of the best artists working in comics. Every time I see his work anywhere, I immediately buy it. And that will be no different. So, like, spec fiction, huge world building from him, and he's already, in my opinion, a superstar, but will only become bigger.
Cool. They've been running a 4-page preview in the back of a bunch of Image books lately, and it's really cool.
Yeah, and plug your stuff again. What should people check out?
You might have heard Midnighter and Apollo 6 tomorrow, and then next week, Justice League of America 2. And I think maybe even Supergirl 7, which is like Inception inside a Kryptonian werewolf's mind. So probably my favorite issue so far.
Whoa.
Awesome. Nick, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to America number 1 from Marvel.
Yes, that's a great
pick. Which is writer Gabby Rivera and Joe Quinones, who drew Howard the Duck. It's the America Chavez character. It looks fantastic. The preview pages look great online. Check them out. Really cool that character has a book. And Joe's stuff's awesome. Really looking forward to that.
Cool. And plug your stuff. What should people check out?
You can find my podcast at moviesmyfriendshaveneverseen.com. You can find it on Libsyn and iTunes. And just Google or put in Facebook, Movies My Friends Have Never Seen. We have 49 episodes up there.
Nice.
Check out.
All right, very cool. A couple of things before we go. Next week on the show, Brian Wood, who's the writer of Rebels, Briggsland, and a ton of other stuff, is going to be here, as well as Kevin Marr, who you're a good friend of yours. He hosts a great show called Kevin Geeks Out, so he's going to be here. He's very nervous because he doesn't know comics books very well, but I told him it's going
to
be okay.
We're going to be nice to him.
Fuck that.
Very nice to him.
Whoa.
Also, the show is free to come see and free to listen to, but it does cost us a little bit of money to do. So if you're here in the theater, we have a literal hat over there. If you're listening online, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We have a bunch of fun prizes you can get. Also, we should mention we have a couple more podcasts running now. We have a regular Legion podcast we're doing every week, and we have a Riverdale podcast we're doing every week. So they're all in the same feed. You can check them out there, or there's a separate feed for Riverdale if you hate this show and you only want to
listen to
that.
Can I come on the Legion podcast and only talk about Kent Shakespeare?
Wait, who's Kent Shakespeare?
Shut up.
No, really.
Well, you're a guest now. We're just going to splice that clip in.
Pete, you know. Yeah. Really, because you laughed. Kent Shakespeare is a future descendant of Superman whose name is Kent Shakespeare. And he lives in a space hospital and is Superman plus a doctor, but he wears glasses. And I think he has a ponytail. It's all in it.
Okay, you're on the podcast.
It's all there.
There we go.
That was a crazy job interview.
Yeah. Cool. So definitely check out all of that. Steve's going to be on very soon, so that'll be exciting. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on the show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
You can check us out at comicbookclublive.com, nerdist.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank our fabulous interns, Ivan Bell, Tomer Dar, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and Riley Trahan. We want to thank Steve for being on the show.
Yeah!
Nick!
Yeah!
Boothman Pro. But most of all, we want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. in New York. Totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming out. We really appreciate it.